This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Over the past year, many of us have become familiar with the terrifying symptoms of COVID-19. If we and our loved ones were fortunate enough to not have the virus ourselves, we've seen or read about the devastating signs: shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, coughing, extreme fatigue, a loss of taste and smell. At least 21,000 people in Illinois have lost their lives to COVID-19, though the probable number of deaths is greater than 23,000. For some patients, though, the virus's symptoms linger, even in mild cases, for months after an initial positive test. They've become known as long COVID patients, or long haulers. 28-year-old Myra Ramirez from Bridgeview, Illinois, is one COVID survivor still experiencing ongoing symptoms. She was the first U.S. COVID patient to receive a double lung transplant. Back in August, she shared her story with my colleague, health reporter Christine Herman. She was on The 21st, and a few weeks ago, she shared with Christine more about her path to recovery.
In the beginning, I had a lot of anxiety attacks, a lot of panic attacks, but I'm dealing much better with that now. I'm doing much better in my job. I'm a paralegal at an immigration firm. I help people obtain immigration benefits. Not only have I been back, but I'm also taking like leadership roles. I'm holding more responsibilities. I feel useful. I feel like I have a purpose, and I feel like I can still help others. The hardest part are the physical impediments. The more I try and the harder I try, the more I realize that I'm never going to be back to myself, but I can just be happy and grateful for honestly just being able to use the bathroom by myself and just being able to continue my work, maintain my health insurance. I'm honestly just happy to be alive.
That was Myra Ramirez, the first COVID-19 patient in the U.S. to receive a double lung transplant. We're joined now by two people who have also experienced lingering symptoms of COVID-19, both diagnosed in the fall. Amy Wolf joins us from Urbana, and Judy Johnson joins us from Rockford. Thank you to both of you for being here today. And I'd also like to welcome Dr. Lisa Vinci, who is a primary care physician and professor of medicine at the University of Chicago, and Dr. Tabassum Nafsi, who works in pulmonary and critical care at Swedish American Hospital in Rockford. Dr. Nafsi, Dr. Vinci, welcome to The 21st to you as well. And Dr. Vinci, I'm going to begin with you. When did the need for this COVID-19 long-haul clinic at UChicago Medicine become apparent?
2 sort of points. I would say around June, July, I had some of my own patients that were diagnosed with COVID early, like middle of the March. And I would seeing them and I was seeing them and we would see them in our urgent care and they just weren't getting better. And it was now 3 months and people were continuing to complain of fatigue, dyspnea, brain fog, just not recovering. And, you know, we started to think like, what is going on? And we do tests and investigate, we just couldn't find anything. And then I was contacted by colleagues at Washington University who had recently trained here and said, hey, are you guys seeing this phenomenon too? We're seeing these people and they're just, you know, we're following them after they're discharged from the hospital or just even after relatively mild to moderate infections and they're not getting better. So I think we started probably around August, September of 2020, sort of recognizing this phenomenon. And then we launched a clinic in late November, early December to try to better understand and see patients who had persistent symptoms to try to understand what was happening.
And Dr. Nafsi, similar question to you. As a pulmonologist, when did you start to realize that this was something beyond a 2-week respiratory illness for some patients?
Hi. So yes, I think in my case, in my pulmonary clinic, we started seeing these patients somewhere around August and September. And similar to Dr. Vinci's a report, I would say that we were having these very vague symptom reports from these patients who would often have this complaint of just fatigue, breathlessness, or minimal amount of exertion. Now, mind you that I am a pulmonologist, so I see a lot of patients who already have some sort of an underlying lung condition in contrast to what primary care sees on a regular basis. But most of my patients who already had existing lung conditions would often come to me and say, hey, doctor, I know I might sound crazy, but this is more than my regular asthma, or something is wrong with me. I do have COPD, I know that, but it was stable for years. And now suddenly I have all these symptoms. I can't explain them. My family thinks I'm going crazy. But those were the very, you know, subtle, very vague, non-specific symptoms that people would often complain of. And I would say somewhere around August to September, we started seeing those patients. And when it became a trend that I would see them regularly, then it came to dawn on me as well that this is probably all post-COVID syndrome, and we will start seeing more and more of these patients. And as the months have gone by, I would say now in March, every single day, I have at least two or three patients who are either post-acute COVID or chronic COVID patients who are complaining of these vague symptoms. And I see the need for a more, I would say, aggressive, you know, medical approach towards tackling these patients down the road as well.
Okay, well, let's hear firsthand what some people's experiences of this have been. Judy Johnson, I want to bring you into the conversation. You were diagnosed with COVID in October, your husband as well, and you actually ended up on a ventilator. Can you talk about that period of your illness to the extent what you remember?
Sure. I got COVID in early October. I think Dr. Nafsi actually was one of my doctors that when I was in the hospital. When I was home, I just had a high fever, but the day my fever broke, I could tell my breathing was very shallow. So I went to the hospital and I was admitted. And 5 days later, I was on a ventilator. And so I was on the ventilator for 15 days. When I came off the ventilator, I was extremely weak. And my brain just felt kind of scrambled. I had difficulty just orienting, and even picking up a glass of water was not something I could do. And so it's been a long road to try to kind of get my strength back. And I had to learn to rewalk and go through intensive physical therapy. And I'm actually still doing some physical therapy now.
And do you have any memories specifically about while you were being on this machine that was helping you breathe, or are you basically completely unconscious for that time?
Well, it is kind of interesting because I actually had very vivid memories. Some memories were real. My dad would call while I was in the hospital, and they would hold the phone to my ear and he would talk to me. And I distinctly remember the things he told me and have confirmed with him that that did in fact happen. But I also had what I call now the dream. And it was so vivid. I thought I had been transferred to another hospital and then to like an outpatient kind of facility. And when I came off the ventilator, those memories were so real for me that when they told me I'd been in the hospital the whole time, I didn't believe them at first. And it took probably about 4 days before I kind of was able to come to grips with the fact that the memories I was having weren't real.
Fascinating, fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. You mentioned you're still going through physical therapy for this. How else has your life changed since your COVID diagnosis?
Well, I technically have not been released from the pulmonologist for oxygen yet. The last time I was there, he put me back on. I had kind of weaned myself off, but he put me back on 1 liter of oxygen. And I've kind of, with the help of my physical therapist, weaned myself back off of it again. And he'll test me when I go back again. But it's just, at this point, it's mostly my endurance. I can only be active for real short periods of time before My oxygen drops, or I just get kind of short of breath. So I just have to be very careful with the amount of exertion that I do. Mm.
Thank you again for sharing those your memories of that time and what you're going through now. Amy Wolf, I want to bring you into the conversation. You were also diagnosed with COVID in the fall. At what point did you realize that this was not going to just be a sort of two-week virus, that there were ongoing symptoms for you?
It was after I no longer had acute symptoms. So when I got home and was with my family, reunited with my family, I knew that, you know, I didn't feel great and like we should take it easy. But as time went on, in early December, as I started going back to work, I would find not so much fatigue, but like if I went outside with my kids, any sort of exertion would lead to me wanting to throw up. And I did. And I still do, which is just both, I think, horrifying for my kids and for me, because we don't necessarily know when it's going to happen. A few weeks after, I also started to develop COVID toes. And I think that even the vomiting, that was, I don't know, I kind of normalized that, but the COVID toes, I started to realize, well, this is impacting my ability to walk.
I'm sorry, COVID toes. That's not one I had not heard of. What is that experience like for you?
So it started, actually that did, I think the first few symptoms started when I had the active diagnosis, and it was just like, oh, my toes look a little funny. But as time went on, they got red, and just a couple of toes. So like my big toe and the toe next to it on my right foot started to change color, but also started to have some pain, have like some raised, almost like a rash kind of. And now that's evolved into like part of my set of toes on my right side have the like kind of the rash, and then the other three toes are just occasionally losing color, like turning white. So that's been kind of a big thing. I've never really experienced that like fatigue in the same way that I've heard people around me discuss it. I get tired, but it's not like, you know, I have some energy. So it does seem that the way, and this is from talking to physicians as well, it seems like my issues tend to be around issues of inflammation specifically.
And again, this is not what you experienced while you actually had acute COVID. What were your symptoms like during acute COVID?
Well, during acute COVID, my life was kind of also turned upside down because I was dealing with a death of a close relative and helping to write the obituary, plan a funeral. So I was distracted. But that being said, my symptoms at the time were loss of taste and smell, which I thought was kind of funny at first. I had low-grade fever. I think the highest fever I ever had was 100.7. And there was one time that I went to the ER because I was having some heaviness in my chest. I was having trouble breathing. And at the time, actually, when I went in, they did do an EKG, and that ended up showing abnormal. But then later on, they cleared me, which is funny because now I'm being referred back to a cardiologist and potentially a pulmonologist. So, the acute illness itself was pretty, you know, I wasn't too concerned at all.
Wow. Let me just take a moment to reintroduce my guests. That's Amy Wolf, we've been hearing from, and we've also been hearing from Judy Johnson. They are both COVID long haulers, or people experiencing post-acute COVID, as the medical professionals call it. We're also joined by Dr. Lisa Vinci, who's a physician and professor at the University of Chicago School of Medicine. and Dr. Tabassum Nafsi, who is a pulmonary and critical care specialist at Swedish American Hospital in Rockford. Dr. Vinci, I wonder what you've heard from our guests. Does that comport with what you're also hearing from other patients who are experiencing long COVID?
Yes. The range of symptoms that people that are persisting are just are so many. And there's actually a big NIH grant that's been put out to try to break this into, you know, some people have seem to have predominantly neural symptoms. Some people have inflammatory symptoms. Some people have mostly respiratory symptoms. Some people have mostly neurology symptoms and fatigue. Some people have a combination of multiple symptoms. And that's been really one of the most difficult things to pin down is like, it seems like, the first thought is like, well, this is all about the lungs, right? It infects the lungs and then the sinuses and the sense of smell. And so that's where you would think if you're going to try to figure out why people have these long COVID symptoms, you would look there. But you know, when they look at the lungs, they haven't quite figured out what problem it's causing in the lungs. So it's been remarkable in the variety of persisting symptoms that people have.
And let me take a moment to put our phone number out there. If we have listeners out there, you have a question about long COVID, post-acute COVID, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We need to take a break here. I'm just going to mention we're speaking with Dr. Lisa Vinci, who's a physician at the University of Chicago School of Medicine. Also, Dr. Tabassum Nafsi, who's a pulmonary and critical care specialist at Swedish American Hospital in Rockford, as well as two people who have experienced long COVID. Judy Johnson, who was diagnosed in October and has experienced consistent symptoms since then, as we've heard, and Amy Wolf, also diagnosed last fall in November and is experiencing a range of symptoms since that time. We're going to continue this conversation after a break. Once again, if you want to join, if you have a question for one of our guests today, the number to call is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about long COVID today, COVID long haulers, as they've been known, post-acute COVID. This is where after the initial sort of acute phase of the disease, which for some people is mild, for other people is quite severe, but for some number of people out there, the symptoms persist. Those people include two of our guests, Amy Wolf, who was diagnosed in November, and Judy Johnson, who was diagnosed with COVID-19 in October. They are both still experiencing the lingering effects of the disease. We're also speaking with Dr. Lisa Vinci, who's a primary care physician and professor of medicine at the University of Chicago, and Dr. Tabassum Nafsi, who is a pulmonary and critical care specialist at Swedish American Hospital in Rockford. Our number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455 if you have a question or comment about long COVID. Dr. Nafsi, can you talk about your concerns about, we've heard from a number of people on this show who are experiencing long COVID. Is the healthcare system equipped to deal with long haulers? What needs to change there?
So I think most importantly, there are a couple of issues here. Number one is, as Dr. Vinci was mentioning, that most of these people have very vague symptoms. And a lot of people who I'm seeing in my clinic nowadays are concerned that there is a lack of belief in their complaints. Like people do not believe that they are having all these symptoms. They are kind of being dismissed as being hypochondriacs, or just being debilitated from, you know, their existing medical conditions. So I think one of the issues moving forward will be for the primary care providers and pulmonologists or physicians taking care of these long haulers would be to believe the symptoms that these people are complaining of, and so to speak, like to honor their story, you know, kind of accept what they're, you know, suffering from and recognize their suffering. And that will take a lot of learning on the side of, on the outpatient side of things. And secondly, as, you know, a couple of patients who are on this show mentioned, there's an extreme fatigue and exhaustion that is playing into this overall recovery from COVID-19 infection. And healthcare systems will have to revamp up their rehabilitation programs, physical therapy, pulmonary rehab, cardiac rehab programs to incorporate these patients into more of a structured, organized, comprehensive physical training so they can get back on their feet and build up their endurance again. I am myself actually in the process right now of establishing such program. We do offer pulmonary rehab to our existing pulmonary patients, but I'm incorporating post-COVID-19 syndrome as a possible diagnosis for enrollment in these programs as well, so we can help rehabilitate these patients who are recovering from COVID-19. So those are the two things that I see at the moment that healthcare has to kind of incorporate moving forward with COVID-19 long hauler management.
Amy, there's sort of a terrible irony I think I'm hearing here, which is one, you have to sort of energetically advocate for yourself, maybe even with physicians and the medical establishment to make sure people believe that you're experiencing what you're experiencing. But on the other hand, extreme fatigue is a very common symptom. Amy, do you feel like doctors heard your concerns when you first started experiencing them and reporting them?
For the most part, yes. There was one physician, and ultimately I just switched care for that. And that was a helpful decision for me. You know, I think that I was diagnosed at a point in which people already were starting to take these long hauler symptoms more seriously. And so the point at which I started to experience more elevated symptoms, then yeah, for the most part, people were open to hearing about it. The problem is that the outcome of these conversations is typically either a referral or just like that stinks. We don't really know what to do yet. So like, especially with the COVID fog that I do have, and there's not really, like, I've tried to adjust medications, that kind of thing. There's really nothing that can, you know, be done. But in terms of, you know, for the most part, again, doctors really do, I think, listen. It's just what to do with these vague symptoms that haven't really been studied that thoroughly.
I want to go now to the phones. We have a caller on the line from Rockford. Mark, thank you for calling in today. I understand that you have had experience of COVID that's lasted longer than your initial diagnosis.
Yeah, I got it back in April of last year, 2020, early on. And when I first got it, we were just sent home from work, you know, and starting to work from home. And it was shortly after I was in contact with a guy that went skiing out in Colorado and came back and in the plane, and he was coughing. And a few days later, I started having symptoms. And
what have your symptoms been like?
Well, ever since then, I've had this horrible cough. If I didn't have an adjustable bed where I could pretty much sit up at night, I don't think I'd get through the night. My lungs just constantly, and just talking to you, when I talk, it just constantly clearing my throat, trying to keep my lungs open. And I've mentioned to my doctor, and he says, well, it should, you know, get better with time, and I really don't see that.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for calling in to share your experience, Mark. Please call us back again sometime. Judy, I want to ask you, you co-own a bakery in Rockford. I got to imagine that's a demanding job, early mornings. How has your work been affected by this?
Well, probably the biggest thing was that we were closed for 3.5 months while I recovered. When I turned off the lights on October 8th, I didn't know that I wouldn't be back for 3.5 months, but that's what it was. But it just came to a point at home where I felt like if I didn't start moving, I was never going to get better. And I told my husband, we need to reopen because I'm not getting better just sitting in a chair. That's not building my endurance, and I need to be moving and doing things. And I actually felt much better after I came back to work. And, you know, it's just a little surreal because there's like a big oxygen tank in the middle of our work table just in case I need it. And so, you know, just a few adjustments like that. But my staff's been really good about helping out. And we hired teenagers at our bakery, and every single one of them came back after that 3.5 months. So I feel really blessed about that. And so I think reopening for me was a good thing.
Yeah, so certainly good to have something to focus on, even with an oxygen tent in the middle of the table. Wow, that's remarkable. Dr. Vinci, can you talk about, is there any correlation between the severity of someone's COVID case and the chance, the risk that they will experience persistent symptoms afterward, and or age, or any other correlations that have been found so far?
It's been really hard to know because there aren't that many large prospective studies. You know, that studies a large population over time. Our clinic is contacted by more younger and middle-aged women, but I think they're just more healthcare savvy and internet savvy to find us. We also see plenty of men. I mean, there is a correlation. You know, there's a difference between having severe COVID and being hospitalized and on a ventilator. I mean, there is a definite, you know, post-ICU, people are very deconditioned and can have sort of brain fog, all related to being in the ICU. Then you're trying to separate that out from the symptoms of COVID. Most of the chronic COVID patients I have seen had moderate symptoms, not hospitalized, but still pretty sick for a week or two. I have not seen that many people with very mild symptoms. I haven't seen anybody who had had asymptomatic infections. So, I think the studies show that you do have to have some degree of severity of the initial infection to have persistent symptoms.
But there is, but age is not a factor, for example, right? I mean, I think there was a misconception.
It isn't. I mean,
yeah.
So one thing is, right, there's probably a lot of young people in this country who had COVID who never got tested or diagnosed, right? They were sick, they didn't have access to care, or they didn't pay attention, they just got better. So it's hard to know how many young people, of all the young people that were infected, how many got chronic COVID. We do know that older people have the worst outcomes. Like, they're more likely to become, to lose functional status, to lose lung function, to, you know, go from walking with a walker to not being able to walk. And many of them are not seeking care for chronic COVID because they're, you know, often in nursing homes or debilitated for many other reasons. So we actually, it's remarkable. I mean, one of the first things I keep going back to the NIH and their study, I mean, one of the first things they're doing is just gathering huge cohorts of patients that have COVID and then following, gathering information on them with the intent to follow them over time so they can start to predict, you know, what are the predictors of who is going to get long COVID symptoms and who's going to recover quickly? Is it genetic? Is it gender? Is it race? Is it weight? Is it lung function? I mean, we really don't know who's going to do poorly and who's going to recover quickly.
And Dr. Vinci, I just saw, and I don't know if this is based on, I just saw the headline in the Washington Post this morning that some long-haul COVID patients say that their symptoms are subsiding after they get vaccinated. Have you heard anything like that, or is that still too early?
That would be awesome, but I have no idea. I've not heard that.
Are there any recommendations about long COVID patients in terms of getting the vaccine?
Yeah, there is one recommendation for the vaccine, and that is to get it. I mean, there is almost nobody who is recommended to not get the vaccine unless you've had a severe anaphylactic reaction to a previous vaccine. It is so important to get vaccinated, even if you've been infected in the past, because the vaccines were designed to give you much better and broader protection from the vaccine than an infection can give you. And so all, you know, basically the recommendation is get vaccinated. If people with long COVID get better, that's even great. You know, that's even better. But
right, right. Amy, I wonder what message do you have for people out there, maybe who, you know, states are beginning to reopen. We've seen some states ending their mask mandates. Illinois is not doing that, but we expect the governor to begin outlining a plan for sort of resuming some level of normalcy, although it's expected that masking and that sort of thing will continue. But do you have a message for people out there in terms of how they are approaching COVID as we, you know, feel like we're entering a new and hopefully more, you know, end stage of the pandemic, or coming at least to a milder stage of the pandemic?
I just want to remind people, I think more than anything, that the vaccine does not in and of itself cancel out COVID. It is a way to diminish symptoms and hopefully transmission of the illness. And so I've seen on social media, people say, all right, like we're going to go back and do this and do that and do these activities. And we're just not there yet. And it's also scary because with variants coming, whether from the UK or from Brazil or South Africa, I mean, we're still learning about those. And so I think we should tread optimistically, but carefully and completely masked as we, you know, hopefully do come out of this period of time.
Well, just about a minute or so left in our conversation. Dr. Nafsi, I want to end with you. Can you talk about, we're about a year now, as I had a conversation with Dr. Ezeke from Illinois Public Health earlier. We're at about a year since the coronavirus really became well known and started spreading in Illinois. Can you talk about the emotional toll for you and your colleagues as healthcare workers, especially knowing that some patients, their recovery from this can be very long and complex?
So yes, actually, there has been an immense emotional toll on the healthcare workers. There are multiple layers to it. One was the sheer amount of stress that we all went through in the intensive care unit, taking care of these patients. It was more about the workload and the phenomena of this disease that had engulfed our lives, in the sense that we were reading about it constantly, trying to figure out what the right treatment was and what the correct treatment options were for our patients. But in addition to that, I think there was a psychological stress that we were undergoing, that you don't want to, you know, transmit or carry on the infection from you to your loved ones at your home. That was one aspect of the stress that I felt personally as well, having young family at home. Then there was a concern about PPE and can we get infection ourselves? Now, I'm an intensivist, so I was intubating these patients. I was pregnant at the time. I was taking care
and
of all these
I'm
patients.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm afraid I asked too long a question at the end of our show, and we do need to leave the conversation there. Dr. Tabassum Nafsi, Dr. Lisa Vinci, Judy Johnson, and Amy Wolf, thank you for being with us today on The 21st, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey, and that is our show.